Welcome to my mommy's podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Perfect Supplements. This is a new supplement company that I really love. I've recently discovered them. Their products are made in the USA. They make all natural, nutrient-dense superfood supplements at incredibly reasonable prices. So I found this company really helps make it possible for families to eat a nutrient-packed, all-natural diet without breaking the bank. And even better, they offer bulk discounts. So if you have a big family, this has really helped our budget. You can buy all of their amazing supplements like liver, collagen, even fermented kale, and get up to 35% off with bulk orders. If you use the code WellnessMama10 at PerfectSupplements.com, you can also get an additional 10% off of your order on top of that. Definitely check them out. This episode is also brought to you by Pregnancy Exercise. If you've never heard of this website, it's a great online resource for pregnancy and post-pregnancy exercises for moms. The founder, Lorraine Scapins, is a pre- and postnatal exercise specialist, and she shares her knowledge with other women and helps thousands of women to have a healthy and pain-free pregnancy, to prevent diastasis and pelvic floor muscle dysfunction, and to get back in shape safely post-pregnancy. Her website has a ton of great information as well as some specific programs that you can do from home to get back in shape after pregnancy or to have a really comfortable, healthy pregnancy without losing strength in the first place. So check it out. Go to pregnancyexercise.co.nz/wellnessmama and make sure to use the coupon code WellnessMama for an additional 10% off. Welcome to the Healthy Moms Podcast. I'm Katie from WellnessMama.com, and I am so excited to be here with today's guest because I have been a fan of her for years. Toni Harmon is a documentary filmmaker turned birth warrior turned author. She graduated from Exeter University in London Film School, and she spent the past 20 years producing and directing films, including a psychological thriller that was released by a Hollywood studio. But like a lot of us, after having a baby, she kind of switched modes, and now she makes amazing documentaries about childbirth, including Doula, Freedom for Birth, and the award-winning documentary Microbirth. And her research for microbirth ignited a passion for microbiome research, and this resulted in her amazing new book called Your Baby's Microbiome, which she co-wrote with her partner, Alex Wakeford. So, Toni, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. Honestly, I'm a huge fan of yours, so I feel deeply honored.
Oh my gosh, likewise. I'm such a big fan of your work. I saw Microbirth shortly after it came out and was just blown away with the research because I had seen little bits of that myself in researching, but the way you put it together and made it so easy to understand. So I'm going to jump right in because I know there are so many questions I have, and I've written down some questions that readers have as well. So obviously your background is in film and you've done amazing things in that. And then you shifted focus after your daughter was born, which I feel like a lot of moms kind of have that moment where the things that were important before kind of shift and your whole world obviously changes pretty drastically when you have a baby. So can you talk about that experience and what really created that journey for you and the desire to travel across the world to learn from all these specialists about childbirth, and also what surprised you the most?
Okay. I didn't set out to be a documentary filmmaker making films about childbirth. So when I talk about we, it's myself and my partner, Alex. So we met at film school 20 years ago, and we've been making films together. So we've made sort of short films, we've made documentaries with TV, we've done just kind of quite a lot of kind of filmmaking. And then we had just finished our first feature film. So we thought we were off to Hollywood because it got picked up by a Hollywood studio and distributed. And then I found out I was pregnant, which was wonderful and fantastic. And then I had my daughter, who's called Willow. And in my birth plan, I had envisioned a beautiful, natural childbirth with scented candles and music and I remember writing in my birth plan, I didn't want any medical interventions. I didn't want any pain relief. The thing is that my birth plan didn't actually come out of my bag. No one asked me about my choices. And I found myself having an emergency C-section, and my daughter was given formula milk straight away without me being asked. And so the whole birth experience, although it was amazing having, a baby girl becoming a mum for the first time, I was left with a whole set of questions, and was not just me, and my partner Alex too. It was just like, well, what happened there then? we had this kind of vision of a natural birth with candles, and we end up in sort of an emergency room and our daughter being given formula, and it's kind of okay. So we had a load of questions. So as documentary, as filmmakers, we're like, okay, well, let's ask these questions in a film. So we started interviewing people just around us. So we started hearing about doulas, and I'd never heard of the word doula before. And this is before I'd never heard of, you know, people like Ina May Gaskin, who's a childbirth advocate and pioneer. Never heard of someone called Sheila Kitzinger, who's been into the politics of childbirth. So we started sort of asking questions, and we made a film about doulas first off. So in making the film about doulas, one of the doulas we were filming at the premiere actually came to us and said, if you really want to know what's happening with childbirth, you should look at the politics of childbirth. So it's like, okay. So we started looking at the politics of childbirth and started interviewing various experts. And that kind of sent us on a journey across the world interviewing these experts. And we made a film called Freedom for Birth, about the politics of childbirth and how about informed choice, and how some people in birth, like myself, weren't presented with the full information. We didn't have full informed choice. And it's something I feel really passionate about, because above all of everything is that women need to have informed choices, and those choices need to be respected by healthcare professionals. But you don't have choice unless the healthcare professionals give you choices and are aware of the information themselves. So we made the film Freedom for Birth, and then after that, we were looking around for another subject, and someone said, you should make a film about the science of birth. And that's how we came to make Microbirth. So it kind of, we thought we were off to Hollywood, but actually we started on this amazing journey of making films about childbirth.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I'll make sure that we have links to find out more about all of those, because they're amazing. And I think that people can learn a lot from them. And before we start delving into the research more, I know that you and I are on the same page here, but I just want to say it out loud for anyone listening that a lot of this research will talk about the difference between vaginal birth and C-sections, and between breastfeeding and formula feeding. And anyone listening, please just know that we are coming from a total place of love on this, and just wanting women to have the ability to make choices, like you said, and to have informed consent, and that there is zero judgment from either of us, and that this is just sharing information. And I know that you feel that way too. And that I also want to echo and really give credence to the fact that a lot of times women will have a birth experience that wasn't what they chose, like you did, and they'll get told, and this happened to me as well, like, all that matters is a healthy baby. And I always say the most important thing is a healthy baby, but it's not the only thing that matters, and birth does affect women. So also to those who have had a birth experience that wasn't what they hoped, just sending you virtual hugs as well. And I know how that feels, and that you absolutely have a right to feel that way. And I know that you're on the same page with those as well, as far as you're just here to give women information to help make their decisions easier and better, but not to judge.
Absolutely. I think there's two points about informed choice, and not this thing about not guilting mothers or it's very difficult, because some people's birth situations, like myself, it wasn't what I envisioned when I wrote a birth plan, but actually, for whatever reason, that's what happened. And it's kind of not feeling guilty about that. It's mourning what you could have had, which is very different from feeling guilt, because guilt is associated with something you've done wrong. And actually, there's nothing I did wrong. There's nothing other mums do wrong. It's just that's what happens in their birth situations. It's tricky, because it's most people, if not all people, will remember their birth, or will remember the moment of having birth for the rest of their life. And hopefully those memories associated with that experience will be really positive and full of love and fantastic. But some people, those memories will have memories which are, for me, is like confusion, and trauma is a very strong word, but I feel quite emotion about it, and quite not angry, but there's it does dip into kind of my emotional core. But I also know that to help other people, you've got to kind of raise awareness of these issues, and you've got to kind of talk about it. I'd just love all health professionals and for parents and for new parents to be aware of this amazing new information, which is really exciting. When you start delving into it, it's like opens up this whole new world. It's exciting. It's not about making someone feel guilty. It's like saying, look at this amazing information. You can make choices which involve this information.
Yeah, 100%. And because I tell people I'm a C-section mom as well. My third was a C-section, which I had placenta previa, so it was not avoidable. But I also mourned that it wasn't the birth I had hoped. And that's why I love this information that you're sharing, because I wish I had had it then, and I wish I had been able to act on it then. And so that's just my goal with this podcast, is to get your information in the hands of as many moms as possible so that they can make that choice. And again, at the end of the day, it's their choice of how they birth, but it is important to know all the different aspects that go into it. So to delve a little deeper, you released Microbirth in 2014, and it really delves into the latest science about the impact of how babies born, whether vaginal or C-section, and how they're fed, which is either breastfeeding or formula feeding, and how those impact their health pretty much their entire life. And I thought I knew a lot about this, and I was literally blown away. So can you talk about the film and what the microbiome is and why this is so important?
I'm hoping that a lot of people have heard of this word, the microbiome. There's had a lot of press in the last couple of years, and the microbiome is your bacterial ecosystem. So if you imagine your body is comprised of millions, trillions of human cells, but you've also got trillions of microorganisms in there too. So bacteria, viruses, protozoa, archaea. So these microorganisms are on and in your body, and they work with your human cells. So our bodies aren't just kind of us as a singular, me, myself. I am an us. I am part human, part microbe. And so it's amazing. So the microbes do things like they help with digestion, they help with your immune system, they help with, there's some research. I'm so sorry, I've got scaffolding being taken down outside my house right now. So there might be a few bits of clunking. Okay, I'm just looking out the window now and seeing scaffolders. Anyhow, so you've got this your microbiome, and it does all these amazing things for your body. It keeps your body kind of moving and functioning. And there's a research between your what happens in your gut and what happens in your brain. There's a gut brain connection, and the scientists are thinking now that what happens in your gut can affect your mood, your behavior, even who you are. So anyway, so this is a whole bacterial microscopic world. And when you're pregnant, your baby grows up, develops inside the amniotic sac. And it's mostly protected from the kind of microbial world. So it's not entirely sterile, but there's microbes there, but it's very limited exposure. Then the moment your amniotic sac opens, ruptures. So when your waters break, when you're pregnant or during labor, that's your baby's first main contact with the bacterial world. That's what's called the seeding of the baby's microbiome. And normally that happens with vaginal birth, that happens in the birth canal. In your vagina, all these amazing microbes, which are a special type of microbes, and their job, not their job, but they're there, and they seed the baby's microbiome. So basically, they're the first microbes, the first main exposure to microbes that your baby will be exposed to. So the microbes, the microorganisms, the bacteria, the viruses, the archaea, the protozoa, they go in your baby's eyes, ears, mouth, they get squished into your baby's skin. And then some of those microbes go into the baby's gut to found the baby's microbiome. And then more microbes come from from when the baby's born, from contact with the mum's fecal matter. So it's like vaginal microbes and microbes from the mum's poo. And then there's more microbes come from the air and, the baby's being kissed by the mother or touched by the mother. All those microbes all kind of go together to kind of colonize the baby's bacterial ecosystem. And that moment is incredibly important, because that founds the baby's microbiome, and that and those first microbes to arrive in the microbiome, they help train the baby's immune system, and that immune training lasts across a whole lifetime. So you have those microbes which arrive during the birth process, during sort of vaginal birth, from the mother's vagina and the mother's gut microbes, plus other microbes from skin to skin contact, and then breastfeeding, more microbes, 700 species of microbes in breastfeeding. But what is, this blows my mind. I get so excited by this, because within breast milk, you have this thing called human milk oligosaccharides. They are special sugars that are there not to feed the baby, but special sugars there to feed the microbes that have just arrived in the baby's gut. So it's like the during vaginal birth is the seeding process, but during breastfeeding is the feeding process, the feeding of the baby's microbes. And it's this beautiful, intricate system which helps train your baby's immune system, but it sets your baby's microbiome for the rest of its life. And if that system is interfered with during the birth process, or if with formula feeding, that could affect the baby's developing immune system and metabolic systems, which could have lifelong consequences. So it's an amazing kind of process that happens during birth and early infancy, and the baby's microbiome keeps on developing over the first 2 to 3 years of life until it stabilizes around about age 2 to 3, and then stays pretty stable from then onwards. So you've got that critical window from late in pregnancy, during birth, and those first 2-3 years of life, so 1,000 critical days, where your microbiome, it's got, it happens, it develops, it kind of, that, and that's going to last a lifetime. So yes, that's the kind of long and short of it, is the kind of what happens during the birth process, and whether anything interferes with those critical processes, they affect, the hypothesis is that they affect the immune training, and that immune training affects the baby's immune system, which means that if you have a vaginal birth and are exclusively breastfed, your child has the best chance of the best possible health. And so the flip side of that is that if there's a C-section or formula feeding, your baby is at increased risk of not having optimal immune health.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that and go a little deeper with a C-section, because you and I have both had one. And so what happens, we just talked about in a vaginal birth, what happens with the seeding. And it's still just every time you say it, it boggles my mind. It's so amazing. But obviously that doesn't happen in a C-section. So obviously the birth itself is different, but from a microbiome seeding perspective, what happens with a C-section, and how is a baby seeded, and how is it different?
Okay, so there's different types of C-section. So there's an elective C-section. So it's a C-section where the mother hasn't been in labor in any way. So the waters are still intact. So during a C-section, this is quite graphic, so I'm just going to say it out there. So during a C-section, a mummy's tummy is cut open, and then they cut through the layers of muscle and tissue, and then they expose the baby still within the amniotic sac, and then the obstetrician, the surgeon, will cut through the amniotic sac, and that's the first kind of opening of the amniotic sac. That's the first moment when the baby's going to be exposed to the bacterial world. That would have happened in the birth canal with vaginal birth. But with C-section, it's done in the operating theatre. So as the baby doesn't pass through the birth canal, with an elective C-section anyway, doesn't pass through the birth canal, does not have any contact with the mother's vaginal microbes, nor does have any contact with the mother's fecal microbes. So that's the sort of contact with the mother's poo, because the baby comes direct from the abdomen. So the seeding, the main seeding event for a baby born by C-section, their microbiome is still seeded, but those microbes are coming from the air of the operating theatre, And scientists have gone even further to find that the air of the operating theatre, more specifically, it's from the skin of someone in the operating theatre. So the baby's microbiome, the main seeding event, is with the skin of, say, it could be the surgeon, could be the anaesthetist, could be the dad, could be anyone standing in the operating theatre. So it's not even coming from the mum, or likely not even to come from the mother's own microbes the baby is seeded with. It's likely to come from someone else. And so because that we have evolved as mammals, as over millennium, over thousands of millions of years, we've evolved this beautiful intricate system for a baby to be born vaginally and then to be exclusively breastfed, which means those microbes, the mother's microbes, are really important to be transferred from mother to baby. So with a C-section, the baby is not, well, the C-section, with it, which is elective, where the mother's waters haven't gone, the baby's not going to have exposure to the mother's own microbes. So their microbiome will still be seeded, and that could be, there was two theories, that could result in an altered microbiome, which could be, the theories are as to why babies born by C-section are at increased risk of certain non-communicable diseases. So things like asthma, type 1 diabetes, celiac disease, and even increased risk of becoming obese later in life. So that's one theory, the altered microbiome theory. But there's also, because with a C-section born baby, the baby doesn't pass through the birth canal, so it doesn't experience the same sort of pressures and hormone release as with a normal vaginal birth. There's a thing called epigenetics, so where genes are switched on and off by certain things that happen during the kind of natural birth process. So the kind of the squeezing through the pelvis and the exposure to the cascade of hormones that the baby's supposed to be exposed to. And scientists think that that could also play a part in switching on or switching off of genes. So, okay, so that's what the situation's like with an elective cesarean birth. So this is where it gets a bit more complicated. So there's not been much research into what happens if a mother has been in labour for a certain number of hours, and her waters have gone, and so the baby's still being exposed to the mother's vaginal microbes because the waters are gone while the baby's still in the birth canal. And then if the mother needs to have a cesarean section, there's not been much research, but the theory is the baby could still have received some exposure to the mother's vaginal microbes, but probably no exposure to the mother's fecal matter. So the mother's poo, because the baby's being pulled out of the mother's abdomen. So there is a difference. There's some research which suggests there's a difference between babies born elective cesarean, and some research which suggests that those mothers who have gone into labour first, they might have received some exposure to the mother's vaginal microbes. So it's complicated, and this research is ongoing. And there's also some very recent research looking at the degree of pre-seeding that happens late in pregnancy in the third trimester, whether the baby is exposed to microbes from the mother's placenta or from her the amniotic fluid itself, because it's not sterile. There's microbes there. So the latest research is that could be present like a pre-seeding environment, effectively kind of setting the conditions for birth and breastfeeding. Does that make sense, or is that, would I get a bit kind of technical?
No, absolutely it does. And I'm excited for more research about the pre-seeding during the third trimester, because I think for a long time we kind of thought that it was mostly sterile and the baby wasn't really exposed in utero. So I'm excited to see that. But I also really want to delve deeper into this, because after seeing microbirth, there are things that moms can do, even in the case of a C-section that you explain in the movie. And I really want to kind of talk about those, because there are times when C-sections are necessary. And like we said, we're not here to judge a mom's choices, but there are things you can do if you do have a C-section. So talk about that. What are some of the things that a mom can do if she knows she's going to have a C-section, or if she finds out she's having one pretty emergently, like that she can do to kind of protect and help her baby's microbiome?
Okay, so certain things that that all mothers could do anyway. So during pregnancy, it's having a healthy diet, eating lots of fresh fruit and vegetables. I mean, you know, our grandmothers always talked about eating vegetables, but vegetables and a high fiber diet and possibly some prebiotics or probiotics, so sort of a lactobacillus, fermented foods, all of that is really, really good for your microbiome, because you want a mother to have a really healthy microbiome, because that's what she's going to pass on to her baby if she has a vaginal birth. But also, this is the thing. So it's okay. So it's diet, lifestyle, avoiding unnecessary antibiotics where possible. So when I say unnecessary, some antibiotics, just like C-section, they can be life-saving, and it's fantastic that we have them. But antibiotics have a devastating effect on a mother's microbiome, and because it affects the mother's microbiome, it also affects the baby's microbiome after the baby's born. If the baby is exposed to some degree of exposure during pregnancy. Okay, during pregnancy, it's attention to diet, exercise. There's lots of research about some moderate degree of exercise for a pregnant mum. What else? So avoiding unnecessary antibiotics, avoiding unnecessary antibacterial products if possible. There's some great research I saw. I was at a conference about 3 weeks ago, and they were talking about some research into the positive benefits of for the baby's microbiome of the mother being exposed to pets, animals during pregnancy, because that decreases the risk of asthma and other allergic diseases. Okay, so that's all the things that a mother can do, or all mothers can do. And that goes for after the baby's born too. So for the mother to have plenty of fresh fruit and vegetables, loads of reduced processed foods, high fiber diet, fermented foods, all of that sort of stuff. But the thing which was talked about in the film and covered in our book too is about the potential benefits of something called swab seeding. So this is research by a professor we interviewed at New York University, called Maria Gloria Dominguez Bello. And she's done some research into this thing called swab seeding. So this is when, an hour before the cesarean section surgery, a kind of a tampon-like kind of swab is inserted into the mother's vagina to collect all those beautiful vaginal microbes. And then after the baby's born during the C-section, the baby is so the swab is removed and kept in a sterile container. And then once the baby is born, the baby's mouth and skin and body are wiped with this vagina, which have, you know, so hopefully the swab, which comes from the mother's vagina, has collected all the mother's vaginal microbes. And so the theory is that this helps seed the baby's microbiome. So Dr. Dominguez Bellows, her research suggests that for those babies that have undergone this procedure, which is swab seeding, their microbiome is partially restored. So the microbiome of C-section babies that have been swab seeded, their microbiome looks more similar to vaginally born babies than other C-section babies where they haven't been swab seeded. I should say this research is very, very new, and it's at the moment she's only done sort of small studies. There's certain risks involved in terms of if a mother's microbiome is unhealthy, so her vaginal microbiome is unhealthy, then you'd be artificially wiping those microbes onto the baby and potentially transferring pathogens like unhealthy microbes to the baby. So it's important for the mother's microbiome to be healthy, so her mother's vaginal microbiome to be healthy for this procedure. So there are risks involved. It's very early stage of the process, but the potential benefits are that it does at least partially restore the baby's microbiome. And there's other, her research is only looking at elective cesareans at the moment. It's not looking at emergency cesareans. And there's other things which, so the swab seeding doesn't overcome the problem of the baby not having contact with the mother's fecal microbiome. So the baby's still not going to come into contact with the mother's poo, with the swab seeding for the C-section baby technique. That said, so it could be, I mean, her research is ongoing. So long term, this could be something that is introduced if her research does prove indeed that it can be very beneficial for the baby's long term health, for the baby's immune system. What else they can do? So all mothers, I mean, this is something I'm really passionate about. So all mothers, whether vaginal birth or C-section, they can have immediate skin-to-skin with their baby. So uninterrupted, beautiful skin-on-skin where the baby just gets put straight onto the mother's chest. And there's a new technique, sort of a gentle cesarean technique, where this happens, where the baby is delivered straight onto the mother's chest. In the operating theatre, and it's beautiful. So the baby is exposed to the mother's skin microbes, and it's just lovely. And that's the best place to initiate breastfeeding. So aside from potentially swab seeding research, there's immediate skin to skin, leaving the mother and baby uninterrupted for as long as possible. So the kind of the tagging, the weighing, all the other kind of checks can wait. Obviously, if there's an emergency situation, absolutely, the doctors have to do their thing. But if there's not an emergency situation, maybe an hour or 2 hours of just uninterrupted, golden, wallowing in all those microbes for either a vaginal birth or a C-section baby. And exclusive breastfeeding, I can't tell you, well, I can't tell you because I'm telling you now, but it's amazing. So exclusive breastfeeding is not just a transfer of microbes that are found in breast milk, but it's these amazing human milk oligosaccharides. So they're these special sugars that are there to feed the microbes newly delivered in the baby's gut. And so there's some research which suggests that exclusive breastfeeding goes a long way to help restore the baby's microbiome for those babies that need to be born by C-section. What else? For the mother to eat a healthy diet. Again, pets. There's research about exposure to pets. I'm talking like cats and dogs within the family home. That's really good for kind of for introducing microbes, which can reduce, there's some research, which can reduce the baby's likelihood of developing asthma and other allergic diseases. This research is very new, but it's just, yes, all the indications are that, yeah, having a pet, breastfeeding, being kind of, I mean, I hate to say it, being a bit dirty. I mean, I think there's a tendency now to, I'm not talking, obviously, if there's things like raw chicken, absolutely, you need to kind of like, you know, to deal with that and to get rid of those kind of potentially pathogenic microbes, so microbes that may be harmful. But if it's just the kind of, if you're, you know, to let an infant be dirty, to play in those dirt, to kind of get those lovely microbes from the soil, if it's kind of, you know, organic, pesticide-free soil, fabulous. And not to be, and to not necessarily use antibacterial products, just to use just soap, and not to, the babies don't need to be, I don't know, sterilized. And, you know, obviously, if you're formula feeding or bottle feeding, yeah, that's sure, you absolutely do need to follow instructions and you need to sterilize the bottle. But outside of that, you know, let babies be dirty. So yes, there's lots of things, and that's what's exciting. It's kind of, okay, however, whatever happens with your birth, there's things you can do. And that idea of things you can do is what I wish I'd known 9 years ago. I wish I had that information, because that is so empowering and so exciting. It's like you can do something, whatever happens in your birth, whatever happens with your, in terms of the kind of the first hours after birth, you if you have this information, you can do something. You can make a difference to your child's lifelong health.
Absolutely. I think that's the most exciting part to me too, is that all is not lost, even because there are going to be those times when even under the best circumstances, a mom has to have a C-section, but there are things you can do. And you'll probably be happy to know, at least over here in the US, there is kind of an underground movement among doulas and midwives to help get this information into mom's hands, and your DVD gets passed around a lot. But also there's an underground movement of doulas who are helping parents facilitate this swab seeding process, even in the hospital when they know they're going to have a C-section. So personally, I've done this several times as a doula, where a mom had seen your movie, and even though she knew she was going to have a C-section, wanted to make sure that she was going to swab seed correctly. So she would actually do things like the vaginal swab, like you talked about. But a couple moms even took it a step further. They would sleep with like hospital type receiving blankets next to their skin where the baby was going to go anyway for like a couple weeks before birth, and bring those into the operating room. And the husband would kind of switch out the blankets. And so the first, like, they would put the baby on the mom's chest, and then the first blankets that would go over it were already kind of dirty with her seeded bacteria. And then the dad would do the swab. If the doctor was okay with it, they would do it in the operating room. And if not, they would wait till they were back in the room, and the dad would just kind of be like, oh, hi, baby, and like be swabbing the baby without the nurse really knowing. And so there's definitely a swelling kind of grassroots movement of people who are starting to understand this and to make that choice themselves. The irony is that the moms that I know who have asked their doctors about this, most doctors are fine with it, but most of them also are like, but that's so gross. And it just makes me laugh, because I'm like, you see birth all day long. Like, how is that any more gross than normal birth, which is, I think, is beautiful and not gross at all. But that's exactly what happens during birth. And a baby doesn't come out in a sterile environment. They come out, you know, covered in liquid and touching all of mom's microbes, and it's wonderful. And I love what you talked about getting dirty also, because a previous guest on this podcast, Jasmina Aganovic, is a microbiologist, and she has a company called Mother Dirt, and their focus is on the skin biome, mostly of adults, but and how you can kind of rehabilitate your skin biome if you've used all these antibacterial products your whole life and sort of destroyed your normal balance. So they have basically a skin probiotic that you spray on your skin to help balance it out. But it makes me wonder, is there going to be, do you think, ever, like, will we be able to study to the point of knowing what are the kind of best microbes that baby needs, and maybe finding ways to help a mom who maybe doesn't have optimal gut bacteria to get her baby those microbes? Do you ever see that in the future?
I do see that in the future. I think we're heading towards personalized medicine. And so everything you said, I mean, I think the birth, I'm going to come back to that, but just about this doctors. So most doctors, a lot of doctors are starting to become aware of the microbiome, but there is some resistance from some doctors who have their education, their training is that, yeah, babies are supposed to be clean. There's, you know, so immediately when a baby is born, that it's really important for them, for this is how they've been taught, to wipe the baby down, to clean it off before the baby's introduced to mum, and to separate, not have the baby have contact with the mum's fecal matter. And to me, that's just kind of, it's just raising, we're producing some educational materials at the moment, some educational tools all about this, and some online courses and things, just to kind of raise awareness that actually, you know, the fact that the mum is covered in vaginal juices and poo and everything else will probably spread from her abdomen and from her breasts, her abdomen, all across her thighs where the waters have gone, and it's probably just a gooey, gunky mess during birth. Brilliant. Bringing it on. So I think it's slowly. And so I love the idea of kind of doulas kind of being the, I don't know, just being fully informed about this and proactively taking blankets in and promoting dirt. And the thing with the microbiome, because everyone's microbiome is unique. So it's as unique as a fingerprint. So we've been interviewing for our next film, which is all about the microbiome. So kind of what happens from birth onwards. And we're releasing it in May. So we've been interviewing more scientists recently. And they're talking about it's really good for everyone to have their microbiome sequenced so that you know what you might be missing. So if you're a mother, if you have your microbiome sequence, so that means like to have a breakdown of all the bacterial species in your microbiome, your gut microbiome and your vaginal microbiome and in your skin microbiome. So you know what's there. And then if you know what's there and what you might be missing, then there is a possibility of introducing those missing microbes. And that could come from diet, or it could come from exposures, or it could come from products. So I think that within the next, I mean, I don't know whether it's going to be 5 years or 10 years. I think personalized medicine based on your microbiome, I think, is going to be the next best thing. And I can't wait, because as your last guest was talking about, kind of your, you know, flares, if you have atopic disease or eczema, that could be because there's an imbalance in your microbiome. So it could be, actually, you just need to reintroduce microbes. I think it's so exciting and fascinating that our health is this intricate play of microbes and different kind of your immune system, and you can change things. So you can change your health by changing your diet, changing your exposures. You can kind of, I don't know, just improve certain health conditions just by listening and knowing about your microbiome.
It's amazing. And there's another blogger named Mommy Potamus. Her name's Heather. And she has an awesome post that I'll link to as well about why, basically exactly like you said, why you should let your baby play in dirt, and how she actually did this on purpose and facilitated it in her house, especially in the winter when babies weren't crawling around outside. She would bring in organic dirt that she knew was pesticide free and let them play in it, and how not only is that great for their microbiome, but it actually helps with things like them getting enough iron and zinc and a whole like mineral cascade as well. So I'll make sure to link to that. But I think that it's so awesome that there's this swell of information of trying to understand how we truly are more bacterial than human, and how do we support that side.
I love that idea. I can just imagine, instead of kind of local playgrounds where you take your toddler, I can imagine local mud pits where you get kind of organic mud and you just let your children play and be dirty.
Exactly. We have, they're building a nature center close to our house, and I'm kind of in the group just trying to help that process happen. And one thing I keep pushing for is, I'm like, we need a mud pit, like a dirt pile for kids to play in. It's really important. We need a dirt pile.
But it's also just this idea, we've been looking for our next film, but just all the kind of different things you can do for your microbiome. So things like gardening is really good, because you're putting your fingers in the dirt, and for one thing, if you're growing vegetables, great. But also it's your exposure to microbes. So yeah, not just, you know, playgrounds where kids grow stuff and kind of get dirty. So have your mud pit, but next to it have some seeds for kids to grow and to, I don't know, turn into mini gardeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So to circle back on that, I want to follow up with one thing you said. So when babies are born, they're covered in this waxy substance, which you mentioned a lot of doctors come from the perspective that you should clean baby off immediately. But at least in the midwifery community that I'm involved with, there is definitely a movement to, you want to leave that on as long as possible. And actually, they recommend delaying the first bath as long as possible, because they're finding that substance has not only a protective effect, but that we think it interacts with the microbiome and protecting it and also nourishing the skin. So do you kind of come from that perspective as well, that you should protect that as like a protective covering on the baby?
There's been very little research into the microbiome of vernix. Just that it's such a sort of a new, you know, such a fast evolving field, but it's been very little. So at the moment, there's only theories about how the microbial benefits of vernix, because they think because it's sticky, it's the microbes stick to it. Sounds obvious, but it could be that actually it's supposed to be there because it's sticky and waxy. So microbes, particularly like your mother's skin microbes, will be kind of stuck to it. And to be left there. So for your vernix to be left on the baby's skin for as long as possible, because if that is absorbing microbes from the air and from contact with the mother and from the home and from the blankets and whatever else, that could be really beneficial for the skin. So yeah, absolutely. Up until now, the kind of normal tradition is to wipe the baby off, get the baby clean, to bath the baby very quickly. But actually, I mean, I know that I've seen anecdotal evidence where midwives say that it's just really good for the baby's skin. And absolutely, I can see that. I can see it, because it's kind of, if it's attracting microbes from, you know, from contact and from the air and everything else, probably that's really good to kind of balance the baby's skin. I'm saying probably. You know, it needs research to back this up. But yes, I haven't seen any research about the harm of leaving vernix on to just let it. So yeah, absolutely. It's kind of just this whole thing of kind of, we just need to be dirtier from birth and not to be afraid of it, and to reconnect with what we're supposed to be. I mean, if you think about kind of our evolution, we haven't evolved as humans to give birth in operating theatres. You know, so operating theatres weren't around, you know, however many, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So we've evolved to give birth in our local communities, in our local houses, in our local, I don't know, mud huts, you know, kind of however long ago. And we're supposed to be dirty. And yes, absolutely, if it's a kind of a life-death situation, if and this is what I mean, antibiotics are life-saving, fantastic that we have them as a, when necessary. Cesareans, absolutely brilliant, because they are life-saving when necessary. And there's so many circumstances where, you know, cesareans are needed. So yes, embrace the C-section, but also embrace the dirt too.
Exactly. Yeah, 100% what you said. Like, my son and I are both alive today because of a C-section. And I, like you, I respect medical professionals so much. And I think these things are truly important. But also, the flip side of that is only when they're necessary. And I think that's why your work is so amazing, because you're helping to give women the information to make that choice, and to understand all of the aspects of that choice. And so I have a kind of a list of questions from readers that I get often when I talk about anything to do with birth or pregnancy. So I'd love to get your take on those and how they relate to the microbiome. And the first one is, what about when a mother has group B strep and she's group B strep positive? Because in the United States, the normal course of treatment is for her to get antibiotics in labor. I think that might actually be a little different where you are, but how does that interfere with the microbiome, and what are the kind of risks and benefits there?
Okay, so I go into, so there's, when we do Q&As for our film, and we're doing kind of publicity for our book at the moment. So we're always asked 6 questions. I'll see if I can name the 6 questions. So we're always asking about group B strep, swab seeding. What else we ask about? Are babies born in the cool? So babies kind of covered in the sack. Guilt of mothers. I can't remember the last 2. But anyway, so group B strep. So group B strep is potentially a really dangerous condition. So so group B strep is a naturally occurring microorganism, and probably in the UK, it's about 22% of women test positive for group B strep. And in the UK, which is different from America and elsewhere, we have a risk-based system, so that if you have certain risk factors, so for example, your waters go, you have a high temperature, you've had previous group B strep, then you'll be tested for group B strep and then prescribed antibiotics during birth. In America, everyone gets tested for group B strep, and if you test positive, you get prescribed antibiotics during the birth process. And group B strep is potentially fatal disease. So it's a naturally occurring microorganism, and a small percentage of babies will get a group B strep infection following birth, and a small percentage of those babies will have a serious infection, and a small percentage of that small percentage of babies might die. So potentially it's a very, very serious condition. So it needs to be kind of considered strongly. That said, taking antibiotics, as I said earlier, can have a devastating impact on a baby's microbiome. Because if a mother takes the antibiotics during the birth process, then it's like an atomic bomb going off in a bacterial ecosystem. It kills off all these like species of bacteria, and the bacteria species that survive, including the group B strep, and the bacterial species that survive are the kind of the antibiotic resistant ones, which basically means that you're getting rid of, say, 95 or 97% of bacteria, and leaving only 2 or 3% of bacteria, and they're the ones that kind of flourish and kind of blossom very, very quickly. So it does work. So taking antibiotics during the birth process does work. It does kill the group B strep, and it can save the baby's life. However, so it's not just that the mother's microbiome is impacted. Her breast milk microbiome, so the microbes in her breast milk, will be impacted. Her skin microbiome will be impacted by those antibiotics, because you're killing all those bacteria within the skin. And if the baby is given antibiotics as a precaution to develop group B strep, the baby's microbiome in that chronic critical first few hours, days, weeks even, that's going to be impacted by the antibiotics. That said, group B strep is a really, really risky condition. So there's no right or wrong answer. There's no black and white answer. I mean, there's some people who would say what you can do if a mother is test positive for group B strep is the baby is born and the baby is closely monitored by the mother or medical professionals to see if there's any sign of infection. So not to take antibiotics, but to monitor that baby. But that comes with risk too, because that baby's got to be really, really closely monitored, because if that baby gets a group B strep infection and infection takes hold very quickly and that baby has a very high temperature, if the mother isn't quick enough, or the healthcare professionals aren't quick enough to spot that baby, that could escalate really, really seriously. And yes, the baby could die. So it's difficult. So there's no right or wrong answer. We interviewed scientists who are working on other possible group B strep measures that just for this problem. So antibiotics are kind of like too strong. Not giving antibiotics is too risky. There must be a middle ground, and they're working on this middle ground, but it's not ready yet, and it could be 2 or 3 years before it's ready. So in the meantime, it's just for parents to read up and do their research and to look at alternatives. I have seen terrible things suggested, things like that are not evidence-based. So things like inserting a garlic clove into a vagina as a potential, this will treat group B strep. I haven't seen any research suggesting that garlic clove inserted into the vagina will do anything about group B strep. And it's difficult. It's difficult. I don't even know if that would work. That is really risky. So yes, it's tricky. It's tricky.
Well, I hope those researchers are, that their work is quick and effective to figure out some alternatives, because I think this is one of those big questions that right now, at least, there doesn't seem to be a great answer to, other than, I know I personally always try to do things that are going to hopefully give me the best chance of not testing positive in the first place for group B strep. But I do find it really interesting that at least last time I looked at the actual data, the US and the UK have very similar actual rates of babies who have a serious complication or who die from group B strep. And you said you guys use a risk-based approach, and not every mom gets tested, and not every mom who's positive gets antibiotics. Whereas here, everybody's tested, and if you get a positive, you get antibiotics, period. And so I think that's also that we can probably learn a lot from looking at other countries and other medical systems and how they evaluate as well, and that hopefully within maybe 5 or 10 years there's a more comprehensive holistic approach that maybe doesn't require antibiotics for everybody who may be at risk and just those who truly need it.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think once we this awareness of the microbiome and actually sort of, you know, having your microbiome sequence when you're pregnant, I think that could, you know, so if you have it and you know what, you know, So if group B strep is present, but actually what level is it present at, and what else is there, and can it be interacted? I think that's all going to help. So at the moment we have these pieces of the puzzle, and we don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. So we have kind of, you know, the picture's forming, but there's missing pieces. And one of the missing pieces is group B strep. And yeah, within, I hope, 5-10 years, or even shorter, I'm hoping 2 or 3 years, but yeah, maybe it'll be 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I definitely hope so as well. So another question I get a lot is from like a birth perspective, are there differences with a water birth versus what they call a dry birth, which I think is funny because no birth is truly quote unquote dry, but is there a difference from a bacterial standpoint?
So that's one of the six questions I always get asked. So yes, water birth. Water birth is, well, I filmed some beautiful, amazing, fantastic water births. Oh my God. The mothers just look so just at peace within the water. But there's been no research. There's been very, very, very little research into the impact of water birth on the transfer of microbes from the mother to the baby. So I don't know. Scientists don't know what might be the impact. I mean, it might be that some of the microbes are washed away in the vagina. Some of the microbes are, I don't know, filtered, you know, just diluted. Put it that way. I do have concerns, questions myself, in that a lot of birth pools are treated. The standard cleaning is using chlorine-based products. And chlorine is like an antibiotic. It's just, it kills bacteria. So if you're giving birth in a birth pool which has been very heavily treated with very heavy chlorine products, there could be traces of chlorine in the birth pool. And if you're using a lot of public health systems here in the UK, we use chlorinated water. So effectively, your tap water, if the pool is filled with tap water and it's a chlorinated tap water within your birth pool, that could impact. I'm saying that there's been no research on this. I'm saying this just from all the kind of interviews with scientists we've done for our book and for our film. A water birth in a pool which may be contaminated by chlorine products, that could be tricky. So I don't know is the answer.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think it makes a lot of sense what you just said. And I'm curious about the research long-term on that, because I've actually, my most recent birth was my only water birth, but I had a baby who was breech, and it at least allowed me to be able to birth her naturally, and she did great, had zero complications. But it was in my own bathroom, in my bathtub that is not cleaned with chlorine, and then we have non-chlorinated water, and I had a lot of control over the environment, which wouldn't necessarily be true, like you said, in a hospital or a place like that. But that actually brings me to my next kind of item on the list, which is, from a bacterial perspective, what about the difference between home birth versus hospital birth for bacterial exposure? And obviously there's a lot of other factors besides bacterial exposure as far as safety and quality of care and all that. But just from a bacterial perspective, do we know anything about the difference there?
Okay, so there's been quite good research about the benefits of home birth on the microbiome. So that if your baby is born within the home environment, the baby's going to be exposed to the mother's vaginal and fecal microbes, would have been in exposed to the kind of microbes within the home. If there's a pet within the home, then all the kind of the microbes associated with your pet. The longer you live with somebody, you kind of take on their microbes. It all becomes part of your own microbiome. So there's been some really good research about the kind of microbial benefits of home birth. If you give birth in a hospital, then there are likely to be, within at least the air environment and things you touch, microbes within the hospital that are not necessarily beneficial for the baby. So bacterial species like Clostridium or, I don't know, C. diff, or, you know, those nasty pathogens which you hear about. I'm not saying that, you know, if you're born in a hospital, clearly not every baby's going to get ill or die, but it's just those microbes are there in the environment. So I'm not saying, it's one of those choice things. So yes, microbially speaking, a home birth can be really beneficial for the baby. But at the same time, hospital birth could be a really good microbial exposures if you're aware of it and kind of, you know, wrapping the baby with clothes or garments brought from home. But it's just being sort of throwing into the mix that there are hospitals are places where maybe pathogens also exist. But more research, more time, more research, we'll have more definite answers. So yes, yes, I would say there is research indicating that it does make a difference.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And since you brought it up, I'm going to ask you, what about babies who are born in the amniotic sac or in caul, as they say? What is there a microbial difference there, or do we have any idea, because that's so rare?
There's been so little research. I mean, because babies born sort of still within the amniotic sac is such a rare occurrence. You don't know who's going to be born is still in the amniotic sac. So the amniotic sac will either be partial, so just covering the face and head, or be whole, so the whole baby's. Sometimes you see these photos on Facebook of kind of babies still born within in the amniotic sac, and it's beautiful. Okay, but the baby is likely to receive a small amount of exposures within the amniotic waters, within the amniotic sac. So a small exposure or prenatal exposure, so pre-birth exposure. As soon as the amniotic sac is opened, that's the main seeding event, as it would be with vaginal birth. So if the sac is opened and it's on the mother's abdomen, the baby's on the mother's abdomen, and the mother's coated in the vaginal juices and poo and just kind of, you know, microbes from a vagina, and it's all kind of smothered all over her, and that's beautiful kind of organic gloopy mess, and the sac is opened in that environment, you can absolutely see the baby would still be exposed to some of those microbes because the sac is being opened in that environment. And especially if the baby then goes from skin to skin, and so if the mother's got all that, those gorgeous microbes on her skin, the baby's going to be licking and nuzzling and sucking up. However, if you can imagine if the amniotic sac is ruptured and it's away from the mother, maybe on a towel the other side of the mother, so not in direct contact, you can see that those first exposures. And it's particularly if the mother doesn't have skin to skin straight away and the baby's like tightened up and the umbilical cord is cut and off the baby goes and is kind of, you know, tagged and weighed and everything else and doesn't see the mother for 10 minutes. And then, you know, it could be that the baby's swaddled and there's no sort of skin to skin. Then there probably is a difference in the microbial exposures. It's difficult to say for certain because there's been no research on this or very, very few studies. Well, I haven't seen a single study on this. So maybe there has been some studies that I haven't seen. But all these questions, I just would love more research and more money pumped into this whole area because it's fascinating and potentially very exciting.
Yeah, especially when you talk about the long-term effects and how it may actually impact, like you said, obesity later in life or risk of diabetes or risk of all these other problems that we're just starting to understand, including potentially a lot of autoimmune diseases that we are just really learning about. Hey guys, I want to pause this episode for just a minute to again thank the sponsor for this episode that makes it possible, PerfectSupplements.com. They make these amazing natural nutrient-dense superfoods made in the USA and incredibly reasonably priced. They are recent additions to our diet, and I'm finding that every product of theirs I love that I've tried. A favorite in our house right now, especially among my husband who does not like liver no matter how I cook it, no matter what I do, is their Perfect Desiccated Liver Supplement, which is a capsule. So if you have listened for long, you know that I use organ meats in our home a lot and I consider it nature's multivitamin if it's from a really good source. If you have a hard time with the taste of liver, like my husband does, you may want to try their desiccated liver capsules. Other products of theirs we've been using recently are collagen, their greens powders, and even fermented kale, because I will admit I don't actually love kale. It's just one of those greens I don't love, and so it's made it possible to get it in our diet. But back to their liver. It's made from 100% grass-fed cattle and nothing else. Their liver is packed with vitamin A, B12, and iron, and this is the same product that has been recommended by Tim Ferriss and Dave Asprey, and I finally broke down and tried it, and I love it and can see why they recommend it. So I actually found, especially with pregnancy and nursing, that liver capsules like theirs can really help with energy levels and help mental clarity, which of course all moms need. So I wanted you guys to be able to try it and love it as much as I have. And they've offered an amazing discount. So you can get 10% off of any order by going to perfectsupplements.com/wellnessmama and using the coupon code wellnessmama10. But the best part, if you're from a big family or even if you only have a couple of kids, you can order in bulk and get even bigger discounts. So they offer 25% off if you order 3 bottles of their supplements and 30% off if you order 6 bottles. So if you combine this with the coupon code WellnessMama10, you're saving 35 and 40%. And you can mix and match these to get a volume discount. Great way to get discounts on their prices and some of the best prices I have found on these supplements, especially USA made high quality ones. So just go to perfectsupplements.com/wellnessmama to get all the details. Also, many special thanks to Pregnancy Exercise for sponsoring this episode. You've got to check this out if you are a pregnant mom or recently pregnant and looking to get back in shape. Their flagship product called No More Mummy Tummy does just that, helping women tone their core and pelvic floor muscles post-pregnancy. They have online programs that help women to have a healthy and pain-free pregnancy, to prevent diastasis and pelvic floor muscle dysfunction, and to get back in shape and to kind of remedy those problems post-pregnancy. The founder, Lorraine Scapins, is an amazing wealth of information on all things exercise and wellness, especially related to pregnancy, and her website has a ton of great information for all of the questions you may have about safe exercise during pregnancy, when you can and can't do things, and how to get back in shape after pregnancy. They have some great programs that I've been checking out. They have one for post-pregnancy, They have one, like I mentioned, called the No More Mummy Tummy Challenge that is a no crunch core challenge, and one I wish I had known about in pregnancy, which is one for turning your baby if your baby is in a non-optimal position for delivery. If you want to check them out, make sure to go to pregnancyexercise.co.nz/wellnessmama and use the coupon code wellnessmama as well for 10% off of all of their programs. Another fun fact about this, they're based in New Zealand, as you may have guessed by the .co.nz, and she's such a joy to listen to. Her courses are really well made and really well explained. And if you are like me and have a baby plus maybe some other kids, it's really hard to escape and go for a run or go to the gym, and her programs can be done from home while your baby naps. Definitely check it out. That's pregnancyexercise.co.nz/wellnessmama. Use the coupon code wellnessmama for 10% off. And now back to the episode. Another question I know a lot of readers and listeners will probably have is, with the swab seeding, if someone's listening and they want to try that, any tips for getting a doctor or medical professional on board with that? Unfortunately, I haven't figured out a way to make them all sit down and watch microbirth yet. So until that happens, any ideas of ways to get them on board?
Okay, so we're releasing a book, so Your Baby's Microbiome, coming out in February. Give your obstetrician a copy of the book or a copy of the film. We're doing some online courses. So again, we're trying to kind of raise awareness of this within kind of our sort of educational training modules ourselves. I think it's just kind of, for me, sort of doulas and lactation consultants and midwives are all starting to kind of get this. And I think it's going to be a little while before all doctors get this, but it's coming. It might take a little while, but it's coming. And I think it's just, talking about, so it's our film, it's other people's films, it's other people's, magazine articles. I think it's just kind of raising awareness and, that this, I'm not making this up. This is based on hundreds and hundreds of studies, particularly in the kind of last 2 or 3 years, that have all come out, all pointing in the same direction. Like I say, we don't have all the answers, and there's some missing pieces of the jigsaw. But there's so much research coming out that it's like this tide, this kind of rising tide that is happening. And the sooner you kind of understand it, the sooner you kind of get on board with it, the more change that we can make.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I always encourage as a doula is when a mom wants to do the swab seeding and she has plans for that and to bring her own blankets, and sometimes she'll be like, well, how should I ask my doctor and what if he doesn't let me? And I always say, well, just remember that at the end of the day, this is your baby and you get to make the choices. And even if you choose not to do this and like be very outspoken about it in front of your doctor, if you decide to swab your baby down and to bring blankets from home, that's absolutely your choice. And you don't have to get a doctor or anyone else's permission for what you wrap your baby in. And I just try to encourage moms that even if you don't necessarily have a doctor on board, there are things you can do outside of that that still can help your baby's microbiome. And obviously, like you said, breastfeeding is something that also we know is super helpful. And just making sure baby is in a good bacterial environment when they do come home and exposing them to the normal microbes that they would experience in your home. And I think that's what I love the most about your work is it's not just about how bad things are, but you really give people hope and practical steps for what they can do. And I would love to kind of end, I want to end talking about your book, but before we get to that, can you kind of walk us through if a mom's going to have a hospital birth, either a C-section or just a natural birth in a hospital, what would be the optimal steps that she could do from what we know that would help give that baby a good chance of having good microbiome seeding?
Okay, so for the mum to be fully informed, to kind of educate herself, and buy our book, read our book, watch our film, read up on the internet. So kind of first step is just to be aware, to raise awareness, even before the mum gets into hospital, to write a microbial birth plan, to start getting together kind of like things from home, to, clothes from home that have kind of, been exposed to the mum or the dad, blankets from home. So as soon as you kind of enter hospital, to be aware that you have a right to informed choice. So anything happens, it is your body, your birth, and you need to be sort of legally, okay, so it's informed consent, but actually it's kind of, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but things like, one phrase that really annoys me is that when I hear a mother say, I wasn't allowed to do that. And it's kind of what you said. It's actually, who's doing the allowing? You should be allowing doctors. So not for doctors to allow you to do something. You should be allowing doctors, your birth, your decisions, what you do within that kind of those next few hours and next few days and weeks. That's you. That's you kind of being empowered to and being supported in those choices. Okay, so what else can you do? So you can walk, when you walk into the hospital, ideally, you would try, if possible, to have a vaginal birth where possible. And I know in some situations it's not possible, but where possible to have, ideally, if at all possible, any intervention, so use of synthetic oxytocin or epidurals even, they could impact the baby's microbiome and other body functions. There hasn't been enough research on this, so we don't know what effect it might have. So anything from artificially breaking the waters, induction, use of synthetic oxytocin, epidurals, even kind of a ventouse or forceps, all of those could impact the birth process, as in it could interfere with the potential epigenetics, or it could in fact interfere with the seeding, the kind of the main seeding event that happens during the kind of the birth process. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't do this. It's just kind of be aware that anything that happens that is outside of a truly natural birth could have implications. We don't know yet. There hasn't been enough research. So there could have implications. So it's to kind of moderate use of anything you do. In terms of C-section, yep, if you're going to have an elective C-section, I would look into the research about swab seeding. I would do immediate skin-to-skin in the operating theatre, and I would do exclusive breastfeeding. In terms of the mum's kind of bringing in clothing or blankets from the home, absolutely, when the baby's born. I'd also look at, during the pregnancy, I'd look at the mum's diet to make sure that she's eating lots of fresh vegetables and fermented foods. And then so after the baby's born, so immediate skin-to-skin contact and support where possible for exclusive breastfeeding. And I'm saying exclusive breastfeeding, I know it's really hard, and I know it's kind of, some people might not choose to breastfeed and some people can't breastfeed. And I just believe in full informed choice, but also full support for every woman who wants to breastfeed or wants to try to breastfeed. Because by exclusively breastfeeding, you're introducing all the microbes and the immune components and the human milk oligosaccharides and everything else that the baby needs. And this is like a living, breathing food that you're supplying to the baby. And those components are not currently found in formula food. And they can, by not exclusively breastfeeding, there could be, I mean, scientists are looking into this, but that could alter the kind of the seeding and feeding process. These intrinsic, exquisitely designed microscopic processes that we've evolved to be like that over the last thousands or millions of years. So if you interfere with any of that process, that could have health ramifications later in life. So that's what I'd say. It's just vaginal birth. I mean, if I was to boil it down and say vaginal birth where possible, skin to skin, beautiful, lovely skin to skin and all those gloopy juices of vaginal birth, and exclusive breastfeeding, support for exclusive breastfeeding for as long as possible. And then just lots of beautiful one-to-one time. I mean, this is where it gets tricky, because microscopically, you want to kind of limit within your family unit. You want to limit the exposure the baby receives just within that kind of first like day or two or the first week. Because the kind of it's supposed to be kind of the mother and the father, and it's supposed to be those kind of microbes. So the least handling, if possible. I mean, I know it's really hard because your relatives come round and want to hold your baby, or even the neighbour comes round, or someone's friend of a friend wants to hold your baby. And yeah, it's kind of getting a balance, really.
Yeah, and how wonderful that, at least from my experience, you have such a strong instinct those first few days to just hold your baby and kiss your baby and touch your baby's face. And all those things that can support that bacterial transfer in those first couple really important days. So your new book is Your Baby's Microbiome, The Critical Role in Vaginal Birth and Breastfeeding for Lifelong Health. And I'm so excited about this book. Can you talk a little bit about the book and how it complements the film and what readers can expect from the book?
So our film, with any film, you paint in broad brushstrokes. So you don't have time to go into the kind of minutiae and the detail of the thing. So the film kind of covers the whole process, okay, just about the microbiome and what happens during birth. But in kind of broad brushstrokes, we kind of paint a picture. So the book is all about going into everything in much more detail and to talk about what happens with GBS, with the water birth, what happens with babies born in the cool, to talk about swab seeding, to talk about what foods to during pregnancy, to talk about breastfeeding and how to support breastfeeding, and also kind of the consequences, the lifelong consequences that are being linked to C-section. So the increased risk of celiac, asthma, obesity and type 1 diabetes. But most important thing is to kind of give parents the information so they can make the informed choices and to say what you can do. Because that's what is exciting. It's like, if you know this stuff, if you kind of read about it, or you watch the film, or you read articles or blog posts, or your blogs, Katie, it's kind of, okay, if you've got that information, then you can act on it. And if you can take actions during those first critical, first few, you know, last weeks of pregnancy and during the birth and the early infancy process, if you can kind of get the best possible microbial exposures to your baby during that process, then that could have a lifelong impact for your baby's health. And not just that, because of the kind of the transgenerational impact, that you could actually be because the microbiome of your baby is passed on to their own baby and to their grandchildren and their great grandchildren. During the kind of the, if they all have vaginal births, because it's kind of transgenerational, then you could be effectively impacting your great grandchild's health by what you do during the birth process. So it's exciting. It's kind of right. Okay. That's what we wanted to do with the book, is to kind of give people a roadmap of what they can do. And it's exciting because you can make choices, and those, what you do during those first 1,001 days, they matter. And they matter for your baby's health, they matter for your child's health, and they could potentially matter for future generations.
It's really incredible, especially when you explain all those different aspects. And I definitely want to go on the record to say that I think that microbirth should be required watching for any pregnant parents, and that your book should be required reading, because you're the best resource I've seen on this. And I think this is critically important for parents to understand, so that they, like you said, can make their choices and hopefully make ones that'll help support their baby's microbiome. Do you have any thoughts on what's next for books or documentaries, or what you see as the future in this field?
We're releasing our next film in 2017. So it'll be May, June 2017. And we're looking at what happens from birth onwards and how your microbiome, but how protecting and maintaining your microbiome can influence human health. So we're looking at, again, what you can do to live a more microbiome-friendly life, and how that can impact your brain, impact your health, impact your kind of, I don't know, just your sense of wellness by living for your microbes.
That's wonderful. I'll make sure to link to everything in the show notes, but I also encourage moms to just find it, even if you're not finding it through my links. Just find the movie Microbirth and find the book Your Baby's Microbiome, and keep an eye out for your next documentary, because like I said, I think this is critically important and information that all parents really, really need. And Tony, I've taken so much of your time, but I'm so, so grateful for you being here and explaining all this, and for all the work that you do to help parents understand this really important research.
Well, honestly, I'm so honored to be part of your show, because I'm a huge fan. But more than that, it's just, I think it's, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this, because I was really passionate about this. And it's almost like anybody listening to this, I want you to go and tell your friends just to start looking about the microbiome, because it is revolutionary and it's so exciting what you can do to kind of in your own just simple things. I've started fermenting. So I'm starting making like my own sauerkraut. It's just this and my own kefir, and it's like so easy, and it's like, gosh, let's just do it. Let's just kind of revolutionize everybody and yeah, I don't know, be healthy and be happy and give birth kind of, I wouldn't say better, but just give your child the best possible start in life. And whilst embracing medicine, embracing the benefits of fantastic kind of new advances in science.
I love it. Thank you so much, Toni. And I will have links to everything we talked about and to your book and your movie in the show notes, like I said, and maybe we can do a round two of this with the next documentary or in the future for any follow-up questions readers have. And like I said, again, just thank you so much for your time and being here and for all your work in this area.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm sending it right back to you. I'm sending you much love back.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank all of you for listening. And I will see you next time on the Healthy Moms Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Healthy Moms Podcast. Did you know that you can become a Wellness Mama VIP member for free? Just go to wellnessmama.com/podcast to subscribe to the podcast and then click free membership to gain access to a membership library of health and wellness resources. You'll get the latest from Wellness Mama each week, as well as special discounts and offers. Also, find Wellness Mama on social media to stay updated with the latest podcast episodes, blog posts, and more. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next week.